The final speaker, Lijah Stewart, Associate Clinical Professor of Surgery, University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, and San Francisco Veterans Administration Medical Center, and Perioperative Nutritional Interventions.
The first question is, who needs it? Who needs nutritional supplementation? We'll talk about that. How should it be delivered? Should they eat it? Should we put it in a feeding tube? Or should we give them TPN? What about this NPO after midnight idea? Is that a sacred cow, or really is it a mad cow? Should it be destroyed? What about, should we give the nutrition pre-op, post-op, and what about this immunonutrition we hear about? Is there any usefulness? Also, if it's easy, it seems to me we should incorporate it, and that I think is something that we need to think about when we think about nutrition for our patients. First of all, let's talk about nutritional status. It's actually quite difficult to completely quantitate. Everybody agrees that if you've got 10% weight loss, you're malnourished. At 15%, you actually have documented decreased immune function. All surgeons know that low albumin directly correlates with increased morbidity. Very nice article by Cutts who looked at actually depends on where you're doing the operation. You can actually look at directly at serum albumin and the incidence of complications, and it goes up almost linearly as the albumin goes down. The problem is albumin is actually decreased in inflammatory disorders, so it's a little bit hard to use as a measure. Prealbumin is a better predictor and will also increase more reliably as you give the patient nutrition. Other things that have been used, transferrin also you can use the same way as the prealbumin. I like both of these. I mostly use the prealbumin. But you can also use muscle function, skin fold thickness, creatinine height, delayed hypersensitivity, global assessment, total lymphocyte count. But I think that albumin and prealbumin are nice and easy and seem to be the most useful. And also the weight loss, I think, is key. But let's talk about NPO after midnight. Is it a sacred cow? Is it hallowed? Should we keep it? Or is it frankly dangerous? Now, one thing you may not know, and I didn't know until I read these articles, that the Anesthesiology Society got together with two task force, two review articles, where they actually talked about NPO recommendations. It turns out that you only need a two-hour fasting period for clear liquids because they're emptied very rapidly. You only need a six-hour fasting period for light solids that are low in fat. And you need an 8-hour fasting period if you've got upper GI obstruction or hiatal hernia. Now, this is their data. This isn't my data. I didn't know this. It might be interesting for us surgeons to be aware of this information. But what are the consequences of having somebody NPO after midnight? That's talking about 12 to 16 hours where this person hasn't been eating anything. The glycogen stores are depleted. They're insulin resistant. This has been clearly documented. And in many studies in severely critically ill patients, insulin resistance directly correlates with mortality. They have increased free fatty acids, they're in a catabolic state just after 12 to 16 hours, low anabolic activity, and many of the people that do research in this say that the post-op state is directly dictated by the pre-op state. Now we're going to take them and put them through surgery. Maybe they're going to even have a critical ear illness following it, which is only going to magnify this whole response by really what happens after this surgical period. So what can we do about that? Well, it's interesting. There have been some people that have looked at this where they've used a pre-op oral carbohydrate drink. This is what you would call easy. It's specially formulated, so it empties the same as water. So if you give 400 cc's, it's completely emptied by 90 minutes. It's been studied. The residual gastric volumes are exactly the same as the NPO patient, in some cases less. They give 800 cc's the evening before and 400 cc's 2 to 3 hours pre-op. That's key because now these patients are no longer starving. What's the data? Well, there have been a number of prospective randomized studies that have looked at this, and they find the following. Decreased insulin resistance, 30 to 60%. That alone is gigantic. Preservation of immunocompetence, improved well-being, less nausea, less pain, reduced hospital stay, 1 to 2 days. This was a meta-analysis. Preservation of skeletal muscle mass, earlier return of muscle strength post-op, up to 1 month post-op, and maintenance of muscle glycogen synthetase. So a lot of bang for a little bit of buck. What about TPN, all hallowed, long-time friend? Well, some people say it actually should be called totally poisonous nutrition because it's associated with increased hyperglycemia, which directly impairs PMN function, so your bacterial killing is directly impaired. It's been proven to cause proliferation of tumor cells. This was studied in humans. There's direct alterations in cytokine production where there's increased cytokine response of IL-6 and IL-8. In healthy volunteers, it was shown to induce higher levels of TNF and IL-6 in response to endotoxin. It's been measured to have elevation in free radicals. We all know it has increased line infections, and it costs more. So see if it's any good. Well, Interestingly, this is the best meta-analysis on this. Pre-op TPN, 13 studies, over 1,000 patients, all malnourished. That's key. Got the TPN for 7 to 10 days, pooled data, says actually you can see these work significantly better, and the pooled data says there's about a 10% risk reduction for malnourished patients getting pre-op TPN. What about post-op, which is actually where we use it more? Again, same kind of studies, 8 studies, pooled data. The data says it's worse. And the pooled data says there's a 10% increase in morbidity with post-op TPN. So giving the TPN electively is worse than giving nothing. What about enteral nutrition? We all know enteral nutrition is great. It keeps the mucosal integrity intact, prevents bacterial translocation. What about that? Well, there have been a number of studies that have compared enteral or standard nutrition. This is just eating postoperatively to TPN. Here's the data on that. 27 studies, about 1,800 patients. What you see is the following. This is standard or enteral better, TPN better. You can see that the enteral feeding is better overall, and the standard care is also better overall than TPN. Mortality was not different in any of these studies. But if you do a subgroup analysis of this, the question is this true for everybody? Well, it turns out that tube feeding is still better than TPN for everybody. It doesn't matter whether they've got cancer, what year the study was published, how good the study was, or whether they have protein energy malnutrition. However, for standard care, you see that in the group with protein energy malnutrition, they do not do as well as the tube feeding formula. So the answer is you should use enteral feeding in these cases. But they're all still better than TPN. Well, what about nothing? Post-op enteral nutrition versus nothing. 11 studies looked at this. A very nice meta-analysis shows that there's a decrease in infections of any type using enteral nutrition post-operatively. Now, interestingly, most of these were actually colorectal cases. And notice that there was actually no risk of anastomotic dehiscence even feeding in front of the anastomosis. I looked through the literature to try and find some studies these guys didn't put in their study. You see there's the control who got no nutrition. This is the standard enteral formula, and this is an immune enteral formula, which I'm going to tell you a little bit more about later. And what you see is, in general, the complications are less with the enteral feeding, less pancreatic fistulas, fewer late complications. But notice what's interesting is when you really compare the standard, you do better with the immune enhanced. And these were very debilitated, malnourished patients, better with the immune enhanced. This one is an outlier where they didn't show any difference. All of these guys, this was out of Memorial Sloan Kettering, these patients had an average pre-op albumin between 4.1 and 4.5. Gee, I like that patient population. And they didn't see much different. So it doesn't really make a big difference if your patients aren't malnourished. Now, what about pre-op nutrition? Should we actually be delivering this preoperatively? Here's some studies done in the 80s where they took some pretty malnourished patients and they gave them pre-op nutrition versus none, and they saw a decreased incidence in overall infection rate and also decreased incidence in mortality. More recently, this has been studied, I think, in a pretty vigorous fashion by a group where these guys chose actually to use an immunonutrition formula. And what they did is they took patients and they either gave them no enteral nutrition or they gave it pre and post-op, just pre-op or just post-op. And here you have the percent complications. What you see, the people that got no nutrition didn't do as well. But what's interesting is the people that got the pre-op and the post-op, they look pretty much the same. And you can see these numbers are really not that different. Now, these were chosen not to be severely malnourished patients, so that's an important thing. If you look at length of stay, what you see is the length of stay actually went down by giving the pre-op nutrition. And it's not necessarily better than the pre and the post-op in this group of patients. But notice that the post-op nutrition in this study starts to look more like the control. And so you see that really the bang, it's pre-op. Now what about immunonutrition? There have been a number of studies that have looked at this. And what these are formulas that are enhanced with certain substances that are thought to be immune-enhancing. Arginine. Glutamine is the primary source that the gut uses. So it's been shown even adding glutamine to TPN actually will improve your outcomes if you have to use TPN. Arginine has been shown to promote wound healing, improves T-cell function, improves bacterial clearance. It's a precursor to nitric oxide. The omega-3 fatty acids in fish oil are very important. It turns out that if you feed these for 5 days, you can actually measure and see that there's been synthesis and replacement of the cell membranes by the better lipids that are now anti-inflammatory. If you give an insult, the lipid membrane now reacts less inflammatorily than if they didn't eat the fish oil. So eating fish oil can actually change your approach to inflammatory response. They have vasodilatory properties and also are very good for cardiac disease. A dietary RNA is also thought to improve RNA and immune functions. So here is the studies that have looked at immunonutrition versus standard enteral formulas. This is actually, I think, the very best study on this. There's three meta-analyses. This is, I think, the best one. You've got patients who were critically ill and also the surgical patients. And you can notice that all the surgical patients really did much better on the immuno formula versus the standard formula. And there's a decreased incidence of infectious complications. And that was very significant. And when they did the subset analysis on the surgical patients, there was a greater effect that was significantly better in the surgical patients than the critically ill patients. What about length of stay? Surgical patients go home earlier. The critically ill, less of an effect. Pooled data, it's better. There's a decreased length of stay. Now, what about all these fancy, sexy diets we hear about? These low glycemic index diet, the South Beach diet, the Nutrisystem, the Zone. Actually, there's very good evidence. If you want, pull the literature on low glycemic index diet. It will tell you that a low glycemic index diet will prevent cancer, prevent heart disease, prevent diabetes, pretty much prevent everything. So I'm not sure why this hasn't been as highlighted as it should be, but in terms of perioperative patients, I could only find one study that actually looks specifically at this. It was a group of only 35 CABG patients. Interesting, that's a fairly small study, 4 weeks of either a low or high glycemic index diet, and they found that the patients on the low glycemic index diet had suppression of the non-esterified fatty acids, better glucose uptake in adipocytes, which correlates with glucose uptake in the muscle, and a significant decreased length of stay in only 35 patients, which I think is kind of interesting. I think it's worth further investigation. Now, one thing I think that it's important to highlight that I think is not very well appreciated are some of the complications of tube feedings. As surgeons, we're all very aware of what they are. I don't think that we really need to go through them in detail. But the one I think that a lot of people are not familiar with is this issue of intestinal necrosis. There have been a number of studies recently that have sort of highlighted this, mostly just case reports. But if you pull all the case reports and you read through them to try and understand what kinds of patients, these are patients who had normal intestines, you put a tube in and they developed intestinal necrosis as a complication of tube feeding. What kinds of things are associated with this? In some of the studies, there was an association with early use of fiber-containing formulas. So you really do not want to use these formulas before the colon has restored function, and also in patients who had some episodes of hypotension. Many people suggested that, in fact, tube feeding is a bit of a small intestine stress test. And if you think about that, you might not want to give it to somebody. There might be some problem with their perfusion. Just a quick look at what do vasopressors do to intestinal perfusion. Here's the data. Dopamine and dopexamine actually increase the perfusion. Dobutamine doesn't have a change. Norepinephrine, phenylephrine, and vasopressin have all been shown to decrease perfusion. So if you've got a patient that you're giving tube feedings and you're on these drugs long-term, you might want to think about that. Really key, you should stop the tube feedings if there's any abdominal distension and only restart it once the distension totally resolves. This is key. You've got to tell the people that are taking care of these patients that you don't slow down the formula, you stop it, and then only restart once everything's completely resolved. You need to start the rate slow. And it's interesting, if you look at these studies, a lot of them used this sort of an algorithm. Started at 10 cc's an hour the first day. Now, 10 cc's an hour, you've already got enough nutrition to completely nourish the gut and prevent bacterial translocation. And then you go slow. You increase it up no more than about 10 cc's every 12 to 24 hours. Using that, I think you should have a much more safe approach. So in conclusion, what can we say about this? Well, malnourished patients should definitely receive pre-op nutritional support for 7 days. And I think that this is really key. If they've got a weight loss, if they've got a low albumin, you've really got to give them good nutritional support. You've almost always got a week. If you give them a liter a day of any formula, especially an immuno-enhanced formula, you're going to improve their outcomes. But TPN and enteral nutrition have both been shown to be effective here. Pre-op enteral nutrition for 5 days may be as effective as peri-op post-op nutrition. I think we need more information on this. One group used 5 days, one group used 7 days. This is the same. I think the early data suggests this is really an avenue to be explored, but I think it should be used whenever possible because why not put your patient in absolutely the best shape they can be in? MPO after midnight should be abandoned. The answer is the mad cow. We should use the pre-op oral carbohydrate drink. This should be standard. This should be standard. Clear liquid should be allowed up to 3 hours pre-op in cases without obstruction or GERD. Oral feeding should be started as soon as possible. You don't need to keep these people MPO, particularly if you've got a colorectal anastomosis. There's a lot of data on this. You can feed these guys clear liquids really early on. Post-op TPN causes worse outcomes. Now, this is important. And why is this important? This is important because what happens is you're sitting there in the operating room and you're trying to decide where to put in a feeding tube. And you go, well, yeah, you know, if they can't eat, well, then we'll just put them on TPN. But when you do that, when you hang that TPN bottle, I want you to think that it actually is causing worse outcomes, that you're actually doing something bad to your patient. So maybe if you think you're going to need postoperative nutrition, maybe the enteral route is better. There's no clear difference for patients who are not malnourished. I think this is debatable. It's definitely indicated in malnourished patients. If you're going to have delayed oral intake for any reason, up to 9 days, you really should put in that feeding tube. Remember, it's superior to TPN. TPN, you think it's your friend. It may not be your friend. And post-op enteral nutrition maintains gut integrity. Immunonutrition is actually superior to standard enteral formulas. There's a clear benefit in surgical patients. The cases have actually looked at this. It's associated with decreased costs. So if your formulary tells you these things cost too much, actually the data shows that it shows decreased costs and also decreased length of stay correlates with decreased costs. My question is, should this be the standard? Maybe it should be. There are now new formulas out. Some of these things taste bad, but there's new formulas out that you can feed the patients preoperatively that are specially formulated for that. I think the low glycemic diets deserve more study. We need to develop dietary strategies to optimize patient readiness for the surgical procedure. What's easy? I think pre-op enteral nutrition is pretty easy. I think everyone should get this who's malnourished. The pre-op immunonutrition is probably better. The immediate pre-op carbohydrate drink, I think, should become standard, and I think we should start a diet as early as possible.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. And thanks to the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine for their cooperation in the production of this program. And that concludes this edition of Audio Digest General Surgery, a semi-monthly publication of the Audio Digest Foundation, a nonprofit affiliate of the California Medical Association. This program is copyright 2007.